You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today's Monday, it's June 5th, it's 2017, it's episode 262. My name's Rob, that's Jason, you know how that stuff works. Before I waste your time with an actual podcast, I wanted to get right to the most important information here that I need to impart to you guys, and that is that the Ranch expansion for Saloon Tycoon is on Kickstarter right now. I would be a total a-hole if I didn't remind you about that. We are well into our stretch goals. As of this recording, we have cracked 40K. We've got like four or five stretch goals unlocked at this point. I remember off the top of my head. It's ridiculous, though. We are destroying, and there's never been a better time for you to jump on board and get your own copy. You don't have to already own a copy of Saloon Tycoon. In fact, you can get your own copy of Saloon Tycoon from the Kickstarter along with the expansion. It's a great deal. Really, it truly is a great deal. It's the best price you're going to see for a long time on the base game and the expansion altogether. $28 includes shipping, and you can get, just if you already have the main game, you can get a copy of the Ranch expansion on its own. And it's great. I'm super proud of it. I love everything about it, and I think you guys will too. We even just today got a Westworld reference in there. Pretty excited about that. I know that AJ and Evan are both fans, as am I. So, you know, if you want to pretend that you are in Westworld, I mean, there's really no better way to do it than to play Saloon Tycoon and the expansion, the Ranch expansion.
Yeah, so, that's definitely the best way to do it.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing.
I can't think of another way that would be better.
No, it's basically Westworld the game if Westworld was about building a crazy saloon.
Right, and there were no robots.
Right.
So,
and if you were also building your own ranch along with building your saloon.
Right, and you were also not infringing on trademarks and that sort of thing. You know?
Not at all.
None of that.
No, it's not Westworld the game. It's called Saloon Tycoon.
Right.
But anyway.
Saloon Tycoon. It's called World West is really what the game is called.
World West.
World West.
That's the subtitle.
Yeah.
It was kind of the working title.
Right.
If I'm going to be a complete liar about everything.
Yeah. That's, well, you know, and AJ was like, hey, Rob, give me an expansion idea. And you were like, how about robots?
How about Westworld? How about we just make the Westworld expansion? He said, boy, I'd love to do that, but can we call it something different? I said, yeah, all right, let's call it the Ranch. He said, deal.
Yep. Well, I mean, when I think of Westworld, I think Ranch expansion.
Basically.
I mean, basically, that's the most exciting parts of Westworld certainly happened on
the ranching.
Farm. Yeah. It was the ranching.
Right. Yeah. All of that's a lie, of course, but it's still a great game. That's not a lie. Get your own copy right away. Back it on Kickstarter right now. Thank you guys so much for your support. All you builders out there, I know a lot of you have backed it already, and really, 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 truly, 100% appreciate it. You guys are the best. You're the best audience in the whole wide world. Enough plugs. Enough plugs. We have a special guest online who's been very patient while I talk about the Ranch expansion, which is on Kickstarter right now. You should get your own copy. A gentleman who we have a close relationship with. A gentleman who I think Jason, you know what, Jason, you I think you probably have more to say about this good sir than I do. So I'm going to let you do the introduction.
He's just this guy, you know.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
That's okay.
It's a guy I know. I like him all right. You know, he published my game, so that made me like him all right.
Okay, that's a pretty good reason.
I actually liked him before that, which is why I allowed him the privilege of publishing my
game.
That's
how that goes.
You know, that's how it goes.
Okay.
Yes.
Who is it?
We have Mark Spector here.
Hi, Mark.
Hello. I'm flattered. You guys called me a gentleman. That word is not often tossed around in my presence.
Well, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. I think, is this the first time I've actually ever been on the show?
We interviewed you and Mark many years ago
Mark.
No,
oh, you're Mark. Yeah, Brian, sorry. We interviewed you and Brian many years ago when you were just getting Grand Con started as a bonus episode.
Yeah, Jason and I did that several years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean Rob.
Yeah, right. Hey. Sorry, it's been a long day. Anyway, I'm just so excited about the Ranch expansion that I lost it. Anyway,
oh, my God.
Anyway.
You should have called it Plugsville.
Is doing an impressive, impressive job.
Well, thank you. Yeah. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about Grand Gamers Guild and Mark Spector and Unreal Estate and all kinds of other awesome stuff that you've got going on for the Grand Gamers Guild.
Yes, sir. Happy to.
Yeah. Before we get into all those details, I want to know if you've played any awesome games lately.
Oh my gosh. Well, this weekend being a long 4-day holiday weekend, I did have the opportunity to play some awesome games.
Excellent.
In particular, I played Alien Frontiers twice, and anyone who's known me for more than about 20 minutes and allows me to talk about games knows that Alien Frontiers is absolutely one of my favorite games. Actually played two games of it over the weekend and had a very gratifying experience with it, because the first time we played, it was me and my 17-year-old son and his friend of about the same age, and my son actually won and was just having a discussion recently about playing games with your kids and if you let them win and things like that. And I always provided my kids guidance, never let them win, always let them lose gently. But but as they get older and they legit win on their own, it's extremely gratifying. It's a gratifying to have kids who are gamers, and it's gratifying to know that they can win. Yeah.
So. That's awesome. So I certainly have not played Alien Frontiers, and I don't think we've ever talked about it on the show before. So for the benefit of the builders, can you tell us how that works?
Oh, sure. So Alien Frontiers is a dice placement game where your dice are ships, and every turn you roll them. And around the board are maybe 6 to 8 different sort of what's called them stations. And based on what you roll and the technology cards that you have, you can manipulate your dice. You can place them at the different stations and then gather resources to eventually launch colonies onto the planet.
Okay.
The scoreboard is kind of a living scoreboard. That is to say, as you gain and lose territory, it is constantly in flux. And the game ends when you've landed your last colony on the planet. No final round, no even turns. Game ends, and highest points wins. And, yeah, it came out back in 2010, 2011. It's kind of the game that broke open Kickstarter insofar as board games
okay.
were concerned. The art is magnificent. And, yeah, I'll take that to the table anytime anyone wants to.
Right on.
Cool.
Right on. How long does it take to play?
If you know what you're doing, you probably maybe 45 minutes, maybe an hour.
Okay.
Things are pretty quick and clean.
That sounds great. That sounds like something I want to try.
All right, let's make it happen.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, cool. Jason, how about yourself?
No, I didn't really get to play a whole lot this weekend. We mostly were outside doing stuff because it was really nice.
It was a beautiful weekend here
in
Michigan.
Despite what the weatherman would tell you, it was actually very nice.
With the weatherman?
The weatherman. gotta get it together then.
Okay.
Like the weatherman. No? No? Anybody?
I don't know that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Sorry, lost on me.
Yeah, sorry.
You guys need to listen to better music.
We're not cool enough.
Well, you just need to know that the rage is relentless. But no, I didn't get to play much this weekend because of that.
Okay.
Yeah, so,
all right. Too bad.
Sadly, no, not playing many games.
Okay. Well, I got to Christina and I had a quiet evening at home alone, so we played a 2-player game of Small World, which we hadn't gotten to the table in a while, and Small World is such a good game.
Yes.
And, you know, we probably hadn't played it in a year, maybe a year and a half, and, like, immediately just fell right back into it. Because I've told the story on the show before that I think I had that game demoed to me 3 times at Gen Con, and every single time
it
was terrible, and I had no idea what the guy was talking about. But it had so many good reviews, and it looked so good that I just bought it anyway one day. And then I read the rules, and it turns out it's super simple, and that guy was just a terrible explainer.
Whoever those three guys,
yeah.
And I can vouch for you. I was there.
Yeah.
The game sounded terrible every time that guy pitched it.
So still love it. Still absolutely love it. And you know what? And I have played the Underground expansion or sequel or whatever they want to call it. And I don't really know why, but I prefer the original game to the Underground version.
No, I agree with you 100%. I feel that the base game, especially with all the expansions available to it, is a stronger performer.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why, because it's still basically the same game. I just don't understand why I can't put my finger on why I like the base game better.
Is the expansion maybe not balanced?
I don't think that's the issue. I don't think that's the issue.
Wondering.
I don't know, Mark, maybe you have a more informed or educated perspective on that.
Well, it's been a really long time since I've played Underground.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is something that sort of sticks out in my head that I didn't care for is the way they have that river split the board. It takes a leap that just doesn't sit as well with me as the base game does.
I think you're right. Yeah.
That's really all it comes down to.
Yeah, it really just ends up splitting the whole thing in half. And it becomes a, you know, an east battle and a west battle, or however you want to describe that. But yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that is the kind of the key thing about it that drives me crazy.
I think a better name for the expansion would have helped too, if it had been like Small World 2 where River runs through it.
That would have been, you know, a decent name. Yeah, you know. I guess if that's where
it's about fly fishing, basically.
Sure. Right. I'm going to just let that go. We also played Walk on Fire from Green Couch Games.
That's a great one.
Yeah, we had got back to that Kickstarter. It's been about a year now since that Kickstarter. I don't remember exactly, but we had not yet gotten it to the table. And so we played that. I had also picked up a playmat from Katarski at, I think it was at Origins. Maybe it was at Gen Con last year. I don't recall. Mm-hmm. I think I picked it up actually at Grand Con last year.
Hey!
And I just hadn't had time to play it. We finally sat down and did it, and wow, what a great, fun little experience.
It is.
The flipping cards is cool. The set collection aspect of it I thought was great, because there's so many different ways to combine the different ingredients cards.
Right. Lots of options,
yeah, and your options keep expanding, and as you get more things, you can kind of strategize towards one direction. But if you don't quite make it, there's always other alternatives to how you can score and how you can do well. So I was really, really impressed with that. And that is a game that I really feel like the playmat is, it's not just a cosmetic addition. I feel like it really benefits the game a lot.
I feel that way too.
Yeah, I don't know, Mark, if you've had a chance to play that one.
I am very familiar with Walk on Fire. In fact, we like it so much. One of the things that I've taken to doing is, you know, I have some younger kids, and so if I find a game that we like, I'll buy half a dozen, 10 copies of it, and have it on hand so that I'm never without a birthday gift when my kids suddenly have a birthday party to go to.
Nice.
That's actually one of the games that we did it with.
Nice.
So yeah, very familiar with it. Enjoy the heck out of it. I will say that I do not have the playmat, so maybe I'll have to pick that up from Jason.
Yeah, I recommend it. I don't know.
I really like it. Yeah.
I don't know if he keeps those things in stock at all times or not, but next time you have the opportunity to grab one, I totally would.
I'll come to his house eventually. I'll just snoop around and stick it in my pocket.
There you go, yeah.
Well, if not, if he does have them, I'm sure he'll have it on sale at Origins, would be my guess. So
that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we might as well roll into our topic. Since we have you on the show here, you and Jason have been talking before we started recording, and you guys actually kind of came up with a pretty cool idea for a topic to talk about a kind of a publisher perspective thing that we don't usually have the opportunity to discuss on the show. Tell us what you've brought us for a topic today.
Sure. So we're going to talk about preparing for a big convention, in this case Origins, and at least what I have discerned is necessary and appropriate to get there and have a good show, hopefully. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's cool. We've never had somebody on the show before. We've had publishers on the show before, but nobody to talk about this perspective. You know, they're typically here to talk about one specific game, right? So I think this is a cool opportunity for us to hear about your process for getting ready for convention, what kind of stuff you're going to bring, logistics of getting there and getting your equipment there, but also just, you know, planning to stand at a booth all day for days at strain. I mean, that's got to be a slog. And I think this is your first time doing it, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been an Origins attendee for over a decade. I have been a volunteer for the convention. In fact, there were a couple of years when I spent darn near countless hours outside of their movie room attending that event for, I mean, seriously, like 6 hours.
Wow.
It was insanity inducing. I've been a GM at the convention, team leader of the Grand Gaming Academy. But yes, this will be my first year as a publisher. And yeah, there's a lot to consider. There's, you know, both in terms of, like you said, the comfort and what standing at in a booth is going to be like, as well as what I need to bring and how I get it all there.
Yeah, so let's let's start there. Let's start. What's your plan in advance for building your booth or what you're going to feature?
Well, sure. So actually, let's go back even a little bit before that.
Okay.
You know, first of all, I had to make the decision of which conventions I was going to attend. I always had the plan that I wanted to have a Kickstarter. It seemed the way to go, and we were going to publish Jason's game. But it wasn't meant just to be a Kickstarter. As I had said in the updates, I was building a company. And part of being a viable company is attending conventions.
Sure.
And so at Origins last year, I submitted my application and I paid my fee and I secured myself an entrepreneur booth, which is, you know, you don't get the best placement. You're not a sponsor of the show, but it essentially halves your cost, which when you're a one title or two title publisher in your first year or two, you may or may not have distribution. You know, I think saving a couple $100 is a really, really big deal.
Oh, sure. For
and
sure.
And so I made the decision to go ahead and do that. I'll say right now, we're going to be booth number 354, right across from the Origins Awards. So all that spot where people go to play and vote on the games that are going to win the Origins Awards. And we're also not too far from the Artist Alley, which is important because Corinne Roberts is going to be in the booth. So it's kind of nice to have proximity to that. People are going to be there near there looking for art. So we're going to have an artist right in the booth signing games, doing box top doodles, all that fun stuff.
Cool.
So once I was approved as an entrepreneur, you know, I knew that a couple months after the fact. It was important, of course, to make sure that my games were actually going to make it. And, you know, Jason, obviously you were involved all the time through the Kickstarter. And but as we've moved past the Kickstarter and we just closed BackerKit and we're moving our way to fulfillment, you and I still talk pretty frequently, mm-hmm. but it's not nearly the level of daily back and forth and consultation and, hey, what do you think? And we're deciding on artwork and how do you think about how this is worded and that's worded? But there have been a lot of, I don't know how much we've discussed this, but there's been a lot of goings on behind the scenes of me, you know, worrying and pulling the levers and talking to the manufacturer and making sure that product is going to get here on time. And in fact, just to be sure, I even ended up having a small amount of product air freighted to me at considerable expense. So there's a lesson, publishers. if you're gunning to get at a particular convention, make sure you factor in all of the variants that can happen in shipping. You know, as it turns out, I mean, the stuff that was air freighted is here. It's at my house. But the stuff that was traveling overseas is still not in at Impressions in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Wow.
And so had I not paid to have that stuff air freighted, I would really be sweating bullets at this point.
I mean,
Origins will be, you know, is 2 weeks away. We'll be less than a week away when this airs.
Wow.
And I received an arrival notice that indicates my stuff was supposed to be here today, this being May 30th. But when I talked to Aldo at Impressions about it, he kind of gave a chuckle, and he said, oh, you naive boy. No, he didn't really say that. But he basically said that, you know, an arrival notice is nice, but it is by no means a guarantee. And, you know, it could easily be a few days after that. And, you know, and I just can't imagine how I would feel if it were a week from today,
yeah.
and I still did not know if the product was going to be there.
Yeah.
So obviously something to take into consideration.
Sure.
And Jason will tell you, oh my goodness, we talked and planned and mapped out the timeline, and you just can't account for all of the hiccups that could possibly happen. And we had relatively few. I think we ran an extremely smooth campaign.
Sure.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so just to make sure listeners know what you're talking about, the product specifically, you're going to have copies of Unreal Estate, and you're also going to have Stroop. Is that correct?
Yep, Unreal Estate through the Kickstarter, and Stroop we just printed simultaneously because we could.
Okay, fantastic. All right.
And so, all that product is en route. And then, of course, there is preparing for the convention itself.
Yeah.
There is so much to think about and make sure that you have, you know, ready. You have to buy your booth package. You know, how many tables do you want? How many chairs do you want? And where are you getting those from? Fortunately, organizations like Origins and Gen Con and even smaller conventions usually have that stuff available either as part of your contract or they subcontract out to another company that supplies those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the route that I've chosen to go for Origins is with that organization. But even then, you need to, I mean, you're going to be on your feet for at least 8 hours a day, constantly talking. You know,
yeah.
You have to figure out your booth layout. You have to figure out how you're going to execute that layout, shelving and such. And you need to decorate your booth. You just, you know, how many times have you gone to a convention and you can kind of tell that the person, the organization, did not prepare, because aside from them standing behind a table, either smiling at you and hoping you come over, or even maybe sheepishly sitting behind the table with their eyes kind of downcast because they don't quite know what to do, you know, you got to be ready for that. You got to be ready to engage your audience.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
I ordered some bunting flags, like this nice, it's hard to explain, but it's like this little flags on strings that represent all of our games to decorate the booth. We're going to be doing a Werewolf Cavern coloring contest where you can actually download a outline only of the Werewolf Cavern card, and we're going to be decorating our booth with those, both colored before and at the show by adults and kids.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Corinne is not allowed to enter that, I presume?
No, Corinne is not allowed to enter that.
Sweet, because she'd be a shoo-in.
So please make sure, Jason, to have your kids color me up some stuff.
I will do that. Yeah. They'll love that.
That's great. What a great way to engage with families.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
You need to have... I'm not Fantasy Flight, and I'm not Stronghold, and I'm not all of these companies whose new releases are eagerly anticipated.
Yeah.
I need to have things to get people to my booth. So, and I feel like I'm being kind of scattershot at this point, so I apologize.
No, that's okay. Totally fine. And I mean, the biggest decoration, the best decoration really you brought is me. So,
that
you know,
is true.
I mean, big draw, that's what that is. You know? I think having Corinne there is really smart because, you know, you've got the artist right there who can be having other art showing, you know, I mean, I think that's going to be a big hole for people, you know.
Well, I hope so. I just will never forget when I was at Essen back in 2013 and I bought the game Steam Park. And the artist, I believe her name is Marie Cadouat, although I'm probably mispronouncing that. But she was at the Cranio Creations booth, and everyone who bought the game got a little box top doodle. And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever, that there were about five different designs to choose from, and you had the opportunity to say hi and shake her hand and just see her do her thing really quickly.
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden your box was sort of personalized from that experience.
That's neat.
That was really cool. And that's one of the things I hope to accomplish in having Corinne at the show.
Jason, can I start calling you Big Draw?
No.
No?
No, but Jason's going to be there as well. And, you know, whenever he's willing and able to come and be at the booth and sign the games and engage the crowd, you know, we're going to have the coloring contest, like I said. And then, let's see, I'm trying to think of some other things. Oh, this is awesome. So my amazing, amazing digital marketer, Heather, is going to be cosplaying our guild mascot. So
what?
We have her all ready to be in an orange short cloak and a mask. And she's going to have a little leather pouch, and she'll be giving out chocolate coins to kids and adults. We're also going to have one of those spinny wheels where you can, you know, get something, you know, sort of free with purchase, either a discount or a little bonus item, things that I'm going to allow to remain a little mysterious at this point because it's not all nailed down. But all these sort of little things to attract people to the booth and hopefully draw enough attention that we can engage the crowd and obviously get them to buy the games.
Sure.
Did you get approval for the live scorpions for the Wheel of Death? I mean,
I did. It is amazing when you watch people try to spin that wheel and not get stung. It is something.
Can't wait. Sorry, Rob had a real question, I think.
So I want to ask you about booth location, because you mentioned that you paid a fee for the entrepreneur thing that meant that, yeah, you didn't get as good a booth placement, and you're not an official sponsor of the show, and that's why. So I've always wondered, I mean, like when I go to these shows, I'm not one of those guys that makes a beeline for the Fantasy Flight booth or the AG booth or to get the new hot thing, right? That's not who I am. And I know those people are there, but I'm the kind of person that when I go to a show, I'm going to make sure that I walk the entire floor, and I'm not going to stop at every booth, but I'm going to at least look at as I pass by every booth at least twice.
Well, and you and I have specifically talked about at Gen Con that kind of those far off to the side booths, that's where the good stuff is.
It's usually
where you find the unique games,
the new stuff, you know, and the surprises. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I want to ask you, do you feel like do you feel like there is any booth placement that's bad?
Well, you know, it's funny you should ask that. And the interaction via email that led to me acquiring the booth that I did. I'll give you the story. So I was at my son's track meet, and they were getting ready to run, and I'm playing on my phone because they're not running yet, and an email comes in from Gamma, and it says, hey, attached is a map, take a look, and give me, of all the spaces available, give me the 10 numbers that, you know, that would be your top 10 booths. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, trying to figure out where I want to be, and I'm looking at this, you know, reasonably complex map, because while the dealer room at Origins is not as big as Gen Con,
yeah,
it's still really big.
Oh, yeah.
And so the first thing I did actually was call up Aldo. And I dialed a few people, but Aldo was the one I got. He called me back because I wanted to get some advice and strategy. Here I am looking at this room, knowing that I'm going to be in the back half of the room, and where is the best place to be? And I had sort of identified some spots, and what Aldo had told me was that strategically, and this is one man's opinion, I'm certainly there are people who do very well in different locations, because at the end of the day, it's about the product. I mean, location helps, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
Sure.
Aldo indicated to me that he felt, in his experience, it was better to be towards the center than it was on the edges of the room. Now, personally, it was funny to hear that opinion, because personally, I am a very methodical person, and what I usually do is I pick an end of the room, and I will go up and down, and I will comb the dealer hall that way.
Me too.
But according to Aldo, more towards the middle was better, and I had actually picked booth places that were all over the place. Mostly tried to stick to corners, because I figured it was better to have two face-outs rather than one.
Oh, totally.
That makes lots of sense.
And then, like I said, you know, I got booth number 354, and one of the reasons I chose that was because it is a corner booth, and it is across from the Origins Awards section. So, you know, I'm not an adherent of the Origins Awards, but it is a big space that they allocate a spot to, and I figured, you know, being in the 300th row, if people are really methodical and they go to the left of the room and make their way right, you know, from 100 up to whatever, then I was sort of in the first, you know, quarter of the room or third of the room, so I might be getting them before they get their fatigue. I don't know. This is all just conjecture. I'll let you know in a month.
Okay. Yeah, I will be very curious to hear how you feel about it after the show's over.
So one thing I just want to, we should move on to the pitch here in just a minute.
But oh, thank you.
One thing I want to point out that Mark said that really stuck with me, that I hear Mark say a lot, and I think it's one of the reasons why Mark has been so successful in general, but now, you know, with game publishing continuing, is that he said, I got this map, and I wasn't sure what to do. So I called an expert and said, what should I do? And that is working with Mark has been one of the things I've noticed consistently, is that when Mark's not sure what to do, he calls someone who will know what to do, and he listens to them because they're smart and they know what to do. And that is interesting to me because so many people don't do that. So many people just do what they feel like doing, and sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not. But, you know, I think that, yeah, it's important to know those people. And I, Mark, you've always been about building up relationships with people, and I think that that is what gives you the ability to be able to, at the drop of a hat, call, you know, one of 100 people and say, I got a question, and they're going to listen and they're going to answer it, you know. That's important.
Well, I appreciate that, because I am more than happy to be the dumbest person in the room and to glean the experience and wisdom from everyone around me.
It's a smart move.
So anyway, yeah, I could tell you more about some of the boring parts of getting ready for Origins, but yeah, if you want to move on to the pitch, we can certainly do that.
That was great. You know, any other publishers who listen, or just people who've had a booth that want to chime in with feedback, we always love to hear that. So
absolutely,
feel free to do that. And yeah, so now Mark is going to not pitch his own game. he has a Kickstarter coming up here tomorrow, actually June 6th. Is when it's starting.
Oh.
So he's going to pitch that game idea to us. And it's a fun game. I can tell you I've played it. Rob, have you played it?
I've not had a chance to play this yet.
Yeah,
no.
We need to play it sometime.
I would love to.
It's ridiculously fun. So, yeah. So, Mark, without further ado, let you pitch your first game pitch ever, kind of.
Sure. Well, thank you. First of all, it's called The Ranch Expansion. Oh, no. Wait a second.
I hear it's good.
Is it about Westworld?
I hear it's amazing. No, okay, so yeah, thank you guys for allowing to continue the conversation in my direction. I really do appreciate it. So, let me give you a little backstory. Everything has a story. So, back in July of 2016, I was at Protospiel Ann Arbor. And my buddy who went there with me comes up to me and he says, hey, you got to go try this game. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And he says, okay, it's based on tic-tac-toe. And I look at him, and I'm say to him, are you serious? He's like, no, you just got to play this game. So I sit down, and I play it, and man, blown away. So here's the pitch, okay?
All right.
What I'm going to talk about is a game that is worker placement, area control, and deduction based on the game of tic-tac-toe that every single person knows. Okay, so
okay.
I have kids ranging down from 17 to 10, and you go to a restaurant and you get the kitty mat, and there's like 5 tic-tac-toe boards on there, and the kids are like, "You want to play?" And you're just ready to just go, "Where's my food? Please get it here fast." So, but what the designer Brandon Barron, and this is his first published design, has managed to do is make tic-tac-toe into a game you actually want to play. And I know this because not only do I believe in this enough to publish it, but because I have had this personal experience with the game, and because I have set this game in front of tons of people, all who raise their eyebrow, their posture changes, they either visibly sigh, or I could tell they're sighing internally. and then when they play it, they go, oh my gosh, this is really a game. And so what Brandon has done is this. It's still the familiar 3x3 grid that everyone knows. And it is still the familiar get three in a row that wins you the match.
Okay.
But he's added in two twists that, as a friend of mine puts it, Joe Codling, I have to give him credit. He says, this is basically the Battle of Wits from The Princess Bride. So the first thing Brandon did was add in a layer of doublethink. And that comes in what we're calling the prediction cards. So if I was playing a game against you, Rob,
yep.
Okay, the first thing you would do is, if it were my turn to go, is you're going to look at the board and you're going to put down a prediction card trying to figure out where you think I'm going to go. Now, as the board is empty at first, you just kind of have to get lucky. But as it begins to fill up with your pieces, you begin to start to say to yourself, okay, is he going to go for that space and set up this win? Or is he going to go for this space and try to set up a second win? Is he going to go for the space that's going to get him the win? But if he does that, then I have to block him there, and he knows that, so maybe he's going to go someplace else. And so with the prediction cards, Brandon has added in a layer of doublethink that is all about that, the cup in front of you versus the cup in front of me versus what are you thinking, I'm thinking, you're thinking. And it's just crazy how deeply you want to think about, you know, where your opponent is actually going
to
move.
And to clarify with the prediction cards, Just because you didn't say it explicitly, and I know this because I've played it several times. So if you predict, Rob, where I'm going to play, then I lose my turn. Like, my play doesn't count.
Oh, okay.
Right? So in the beginning, a lot of times, the first turn, if you're not sure what to pick, you pick center, right? Because I don't want you to go in the center.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you have a tendency to play on a corner, so I'm going to pick a random corner and try and block you. But that's the real trick, is that the optimal play many times is blocked.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what the optimal play is, so why would you let me make that play?
Sure.
So, just to be clear, Mark, so that everybody got
it. No, that's fine. I totally kind of ran off with my own personal excitement in one direction. So your clarification of that very key part of the mechanics is very important. What also Brandon added in are specialists. So let me go back and say that in as much as this is built on a tic-tac-toe chassis, we have added on the theme of spies infiltrating a building. And so the art and graphic design is done by Josh Capel, who I swear if you turn around and point at, you know, a shelf in your game collection, chances are he has had a role in one of those games, either in designing the rule book, in doing the graphic design. He may have designed the game himself. This is a man whose talents are woefully underrated, and I hope to change that, but that's a different conversation. So the board is a building, and it's made up of rooms, and you're infiltrating this building in order to capture the elements for a doomsday device and keep it out of the hands of the other spy organization that you're competing against.
Well, sure.
And
because you're the good guys.
Within any organization like that, you have your basic spies, and then you have your specialists. And so when I first signed the game with Brandon, he had a handful of specialists that were like 90% there. And we actually tweaked one of them into something totally different. We added one in and tweaked its powers, and the rest have basically been kept the same. But you have five specialists, and aside from chance, you're almost always going to be playing two different specialists in the game. And so where the specialists different from the operatives are that they can affect the board in strange ways. So the sniper can actually remove a piece from the board. The assassin can cover a piece that's existing on the board. There's a pusher that can push pieces from one space to another and actually move things off the board. There is the hacker that allows for a double prediction on a subsequent round. And there's one that I'm missing, but it doesn't matter. We'll let that go. We'll let that one be a surprise. So not only are you predicting where you think I'm going to go, but as a player, I have to look for the opportune moment to use my specialist. And you have to try to think about, is he going to use his specialist? And the hitch there is that if I use my specialist and he maintains position, then it stays on the board and executes its special maneuver. If, however, you have predicted where I'm going to go with my specialist, the specialist doesn't get to execute their special power, and they are actually out of the match and out of the game, which, you know, if you go too early, can be a bad thing. It really is a very careful thing in terms of trying to balance when you should use that to most impact.
Interesting. So now the thing about tic-tac-toe is that generally when adults play, it's a tie game every time.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wins. Is that a problem in Pocket Ops?
Well, it's not a problem, and I've played many, many games, and some of them have resulted in ties, some of them have not. We, in our testing, did not find any balance, or I should say imbalance in that one way or another.
Hmm. Good.
So,
but what happens in case of a tie?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was going to go there. So basically, you play up to a three-game set, and the winner of the game is the best two out of three. The first player gets to go first, and of course the opponent predicts, but the second player actually wins ties. So that is sort of a secondary win condition for the second player, is that if they can force a tie, they will win.
Gotcha.
And I can say from playing the game a lot, that strategy is, it doesn't feel like, oh crap, we tied. It's, oh crap, he's trying to make us tie. Because you're just trying to, like, as the defender, you very well may be just trying to force a tie.
Gotcha.
Because it's a totally valid strategy. But it's harder to do than you would think because of the special pieces.
Okay.
And the predictions.
Right, exactly. It's the special pieces and the predictions combined that, and now this is going to sound like a commercial, which I guess whatever, which makes the game a game to be published by someone who considers themselves a legitimate publisher. And, you know, and I mean, it is, let's say I'm maybe 2 years behind the microgame craze, but that's okay. I'm not publishing this because it's a microgame. I'm publishing it because this is a game that when you play it, you want to smack yourself in the head and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe no one thought of this.
Yeah, and it's one of those games.
And you're just blown away at how something that is just so time-worn, you are ready to be done with it, that it has new life. And it's the kind of game you're going to, as I've said many times before, you're going to throw it in your bag, and you're going to bring it to dinner so that you can play it in between ordering and getting your food. You can play it in line. James Hudson played it on a tray table of an airplane. You know, it is that kind of game, and it's yep. accessible, and it's good for interactions between kids, between adults and kids, and between adults.
Sweet.
Yep.
Well, all right.
Ta-da, cool.
That sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to giving it a shot.
And that is on Kickstarter June 6th. So tomorrow, if you're listening on the day this was published. But check it out. I highly encourage you to check it out. I will admit that when Mark first said, I've got this game based on Tic-Tac-Toe, I think I actually rolled my eyes at Mark's face when he said that. And he said, no, trust me. And then I had to unroll my eyes because the game was so fun.
How do you unroll eyes?
You just roll them back forward. I played the whole game with my eyes rolled back in my head. Okay. It made it very difficult.
So. It sounds like it.
Well, then our friend Alan from work also, I said to him, oh, you got to try this game. It's based on Tic-Tac-Toe. And he's like, really? And then we got dinner. And he's like, this is amazing. And he's a super smart guy and a programmer. So like, and he was all about it. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Mark. We appreciate that.
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm just super excited to... you know, bring this game forward, and I really feel it's a game that deserves to see the light of day.
Yeah, and so we're out of time here. So last chance, Mark. How do people find you? How do they find Grand Gamers Guild? Give us your plugs.
Sure. So I am on the web at grandgamersguild.com. I'm on Facebook at Grand Gamers Guild, but you drop all the vowels. I'm sorry, that's Twitter at Grand Gamers Guild. Drop all the vowels. You can search us Grand Gamers Guild on Facebook. And, of course, we're going to be at Origins. And, yeah, I think that kind of covers everything.
All right.
Awesome.
All right. Well,
thanks again.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. And thank you, everybody out there, for listening to Building the Game. We really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland, and I'm at poorly_design. You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can like us on Facebook. Give us a 5-star review where all great podcasts are found. You can also back the ranch expansion to Saloon Tycoon on Kickstarter right now.
Is that on Kickstarter now?
It is on Kickstarter.
I had no idea.
Did I not mention that before?
You did it.
Wow. Well, yeah, you can totally do that on Kickstarter. You know what? That would be a really great 1-2 punch to back the ranch expansion and then back Pocket Ops. You know what? In fact, I think that's exactly what I'm going to do. I've already backed the ranch expansion. I should probably back Pocket Ops too.
I think I'll do that too.
Wow, man. Well, what a great time. What a great time for gamers and Kickstarter.
What a great time to be alive. Right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like I forgot one of our standard plugs or something.
But you know, it's standard, so people should know.
Yeah, we'll get it caught up next week. So, Mark, one more time. Thank you so much for hanging out with us, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Cool. And then I think you're gonna pitch. Was it you're gonna pitch Stroop or what?
I'm gonna pitch Pocket Ops.
Pocket Ops. Okay. Cool. Good. Cool. All right.
I don't make too much a fool of myself.
You'll do fine. We make a fool of ourselves every week.